I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. So you think you know Christian music. I don't mean church music, but the kind of Christian music you hear on the radio. Well, if Amy Grant's music fits your understanding of where Christian contemporary music is still today, well, you might want to listen again. Sunshine upon my face, a new song for me to sing. Tell the world how I feel inside, even though it might cost me everything. It is Christian rock. The song is Alive. The group is POD, or Payable on Death. Christian rock is the fastest growing sector of the commercial music business. When you add the sales together with other Christian contemporary and gospel music, it's close to 50 million albums a year. That's a $900 billion business. Billion-dollar business. That's more than jazz and classical music put together. Big time stuff. There is also a growing world of church rock clubs. I know that sounds a little like a casino without the gambling, but these clubs are a part of Christian outreach. It's not just music, it's ministry. We'll meet a manager of one of the larger clubs on the program today. We'll hear some of the music, and we want to hear from you. Is Christian rock on your playlist? Or is it too much of a contradiction to imagine St. Paul so close to Les Paul? Is it time that rock shook its bad boy image and made a little room for Jesus? Or is rock, without the grunge, not really rock? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're starting today with a gentleman who searches for the latest talent among Christian rockers. Brian Myler did A&R work for Warner Brothers before striking out on his own. He's worked with some of the top Christian talent in the business. And he's joining us from where else but Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Are you a fan of the music or just a marketing man?
I'm a huge fan. I mean, that's what makes my job so great, is that I love all this music. I love everything about it. I love the bands. I love the guys in the bands.
How did you get into the business of choosing the talent, though? I mean, the music wasn't always great, was it?
Oh, well, there's always been substantially good bands over the years, but as having so many bands that are good these days, no. This is really a great time when so many bands are coming out that are good. So the way I got into it,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the way I got into it was just when I worked at the distribution company, I just made it known to everybody how much I loved music and I loved rock bands. And if anybody had any questions, I'd be there to help them. So that's how I kind of worked my way up.
I'm wondering if you can just sort of give us an idiot's guide to the recent growth in Christian rock. If we were to start with the band Jars of Clay, would that be a sensible place to sort of begin?
Yeah, that's great, because that's in the mid-90s, and they're the ones that kind of, they had one of the first singles on the mainstream radio that you could hear in any bar in the world right now, you know, back in the mid-90s. So since Jars of Clay kind of got so big, I remember being in college, every single person had that CD. So I remember that being really big. And then the next would be like Sixpence when they got so big in the late 90s.
Hang on a second. Just before we leave them, let's listen to a little bit. This is Flood, Jars of Clay.
Rain on my face hasn't stopped raining for days. My world is a flood, but slowly I become one with the mud. But if I can swim after 40 days in my mind is grasped.
And if we jump ahead closer to today, Brian, and pick something like Casting Crowns, where does that band fit now in Christian rock?
Oh, Casting Crowns is one of the premier Christian bands. I mean, there's Christian people in the band, and they're, you know, making music for Christians, and they're in the youth groups, and they did great. You know, they're doing so well. They've been on the top of the charts with the song We Are the Body, and they've been doing so many things with all the youth groups. And since the lead singer is a youth minister, they've been able to go right in there and play the music and do a really good job. And he won Songwriter of the Year this year.
Help me, though, with the distinction that you made about the Christian groups. If you had people who weren't Christian but playing Christian music, would they fit in Christian rock? How do you make that distinction?
Well, the distinction is, where is the music being played? I mean, where are the bands playing? Are they playing in your local bars when it's 18 and up night or 16 and up night, or are they playing churches, youth groups, and stuff like that? There's a real distinction between the buyers, because you've got the kids who listen to nothing but mainstream music and then they try to find Christian equivalents to that. Then you have the Christian kids who are in the youth groups, other Christian kids in the youth groups, that listen to just Christian music. I mean, that's all vertical music, which means singing straight to God, about God, and everything like that. So most of the music is focused around that instead of relationship stuff, you know, girls and all that sort of stuff that the youth are going through.
Let's have a listen to one of the Casting Crowns piece, a little piece of song called What If His People Prayed? Brian, is it unusual to get songs that address controversial issues like abortion? There's a line in there saying, unborn children see the light of day. I know it may be not controversial among some Christian groups, but that distinguishes the music, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. That's the point. I mean, people are listening to Christian music that coincide with their beliefs. You know, when it comes to abortion and a lot of things, there's a lot of topics that the youth of America want to hear about, in the Christian youth, you know, so that's why they listen to certain bands and certain artists.
Tell me about the group Bleach. Where do they fit in?
Oh, Bleach has been pioneering. They were, you know, they were signed to one of the bigger labels called Forefront back in the 90s, and then they kind of relaxed a little, and then they got signed to Tooth and Nail. They've been a staple amongst, you know, they've played with everybody. They've been in every kind of festival. They live here in Nashville, actually.
All right, Connection listeners, there is the short course in Christian rock. We're going to be talking a lot more about the music and the people playing it and where it's played. Brian Myler is a guest. He's an independent A&R Christian rock industry expert who will be with us for the balance of the hour. I want to bring Nancy Alexhuk in. She is pastor and co-director at Club 3 Degrees in Minneapolis, and she's been listening along. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Describe your club for me on a typical Saturday night, Club 3 Degrees. What would I see?
Well, you'd see a whole lot of people having a great time. What you wouldn't see would be people getting drunk or smoking or falling all over each other. So we do all different styles of music. So depending on who we've got booked in the main room kind of determines the type of crowd that we've got. But we always have a good time.
Is it mainly live music or also DJs?
We have a DJ right now late night on Saturdays after the concert. So we always do live bands Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening until about 11, 11:30.
Now, how do you look at it, Nancy? If you're a pastor, do you look at it as part of the church or do you look at it as a club?
Well, I look at it as both. Actually, we are a non-alcoholic, smoke-free nightclub, basically. We don't have a whole lot in the club that would give anyone the impression that we would be a church. Mm-hmm. However, I think the atmosphere that's created and the people that volunteer at the club definitely set it apart. And people that are not familiar with the whole Christian rock scene or whatever, they come in, they definitely can tell something's up.
And do you have any rules or standards about the type of music that's played there? Do you look at the lyrics before they're there? Do you leave that up to the band? How do you manage that?
We do. When we book local bands or bands that we have not worked with before, there's an application that they can fill out. We do only play Christian music performed by, you know, basically Christian artists, because if you're not a Christian, why would you want to do Christian music? But we do ask for them to submit a copy of their lyrics, because we want to make sure we're a ministry. And although we want to have a good time and we want the people that come to enjoy the nightclub atmosphere, we do want to ensure that the lyrics that are being sung are consistent with our mission as a ministry. As far as the national bands go, bands that are signed to record labels in the Christian music industry, we pretty much know who's out there, who has kind of more of a ministry-oriented heart. But we're definitely open to bringing in bands that that have crossed over into the secular market as an outreach, just to let people know that there is a Christian place available in Minneapolis.
I want to just try and understand this a little bit more carefully, if I can. When you talk about what's in the lyrics of the song, does that mean that, what would be a good example, like a Love and Spoonful song, Do You Believe in Magic? An old song, kind of upbeat, not a lot of negativity in there. Would that qualify as a song, or does it have to be more specifically the type of music that is talking about Jesus or proselytizing or doing that sort of thing?
Well, I don't necessarily believe that every song has to have the word God or Jesus in it. But if you look at a band's lyrics overall, I do believe that you should see lyrics that are consistent with a Christian worldview, with a faith-based within their lyrics and what the band is all about. And so we do choose to go that route. We also ask bands not to play secular cover tunes, and there's a very specific reason for that.
What's that?
Well, music is such a powerful medium, and about 12 years ago, we had a young woman that was coming to the club quite a bit. She had come out of treatment, and she was 15, 16 years old, and she was pretty much hanging out at the club as a way to stay straight. And one of her favorite bands launched into a cover tune. And at the time, we were kind of wrestling with the whole decision. Do we let bands do cover tunes? Because to your point, there are a lot of secular songs out there that don't necessarily have anything in them that's derogatory or would be considered negative.
Right.
But anyway, they launched into a cover tune. And she came out of that concert hall just bawling because it was a song that she had gotten high to. And it brought back such a flood of memories to her. And she was so upset because here she thought she was in a place that was safe and protected and that, was trying to do everything in her power to change her environment and the things that reminded her of her former lifestyle. And so at that point, my husband and I just decided to make it a policy that, we're going to maybe go to what seems like an extreme for some because a lot of music out there doesn't have a negative impact. But we'd rather protect the one than just have a wide sweeping, anything goes kind of a deal. And as a ministry and as a pastor, we feel really strongly that that's something that we need to do.
All right, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour we're talking about Christian rock. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, it is the fastest growing sector in the commercial music business. One in five American teenagers is buying Christian rock music at different levels and with different intentions. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We'll also talk about the art itself and how you measure skill and originality in art when it has that Christian theme attached to it. Does it make any difference, either to you as a listener or perhaps to you as an artist? Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. The telephone number of our program is 1-800-423-8255. In this hour, we're talking about the place of Christian rock in music, in your life, in your city. Nancy Alexuk is with us. She's pastor and co-director at Club 3 Degrees in Minneapolis. That is an 18,000-square-foot club, which can hold up to 1,700 people with DJs, live bands. And we also have with us Brian Myler, an independent A&R Christian rock music industry expert. And joining us from Nashville, Brian, let me come back to you if I can, because in my own limited understanding of Christian music, I always got the connection with country music. I always, kind of saw that personal, painful, almost testimonial nature of the music as bringing Christian and country close together. But I had a harder time figuring out how you get rock music together with Christian music when so much of rock is supposed to be, you know, the bad boy rebel music.
Right, right. Well, I think it spawned from, you know, Christian kids growing up in youth groups and listening to all kinds of music, listening to mainstream music and Christian music, and that's inspired them to want to become musicians. So, you know, when they're in the backwoods of some, you know, small town, they really want to, you know, do something about that love of music, so they pick up a guitar and they start playing. So that's what they've identified with is with the rock music of the, of all the ages. At least that's how I came about it.
And I mean,
I was listening to all the late 80s metal, you know, Poison, Warrant, Def Leppard, you know, you name it. I was listening to that. But then when I got saved, I was really trying to find more positive music to influence my life. So,
and there wasn't a lot there back then, eh?
Oh, man, no. You know, in the late 80s, you had, you know, a lot of bands that I honestly didn't know about because I lived up in the north, which really didn't have any Christian radio, so I didn't know about The Bride and, you know, White Heart and all these, you know, Christian metal bands. You know, I kind of skipped that era. And then when I went to college in 93, I found out about all the new Tooth and Nail bands that came out, so that kind of influenced me. At the same time, Smashing Pumpkins was influencing me.
I want to bring Tom Moon into the conversation here. Tom's joining us on the phone from Philadelphia. He's music critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, but does a lot of work for Rolling Stone magazine and is often a commentator on NPR. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for joining us. Do you listen to Christian rock?
I listen to a lot of music that is sold as Christian rock. But I don't necessarily subscribe to that the genre distinction the way your other guests have delineated it. I know it's a huge phenomenon and is sort of a groundswell thing, but in terms of music, it's all just music. I think POD is an excellent example of a band that would merit attention from music critics whether or not their message was aimed in a certain direction or at a certain audience or toward a certain end.
There's one piece of music that I wanted to play on the program, Tom, when you were with us, and perhaps it's a good time to listen now to just a couple of lines from the Thousand Foot Crutch song, All the Way Love.
Let's fuck it up! Remake, vacate, what's today's weight? In this day and age, ain't nobody say get you, got you, yo. Who shot you? I must warn you, it's that way in California. No one's giving, everyone's taking. Who sets off the moves? You'll make it. We're bringing it, got you singing it.
I was actually thinking of this piece of music, Tom, when I was talking with Brian earlier on the program about kids who find that they don't have the music with the lyrics, you know, saying the sorts of things that they want saying. To me, that sounds so much like the Red Hot Chili Peppers that I'm thinking to myself, so is that what they were trying to do? Do you find that?
There's a lot of that, and that to me is the key distinction. It's like, I can understand why some kids who are in the youth groups and are identifying themselves as Christian rock kids would go to this in front of the Red Hot Chili Peppers or even before that Earth, Wind & Fire or mm-hmm. any of the other antecedents, Sly and the Family Stone. You hear a little bit of that in there. But in terms of on the musical merits, I think you have a hard time arguing for that piece of music over the obvious, you know, source material.
Brian, is that fair to say that there's a fair amount of imitation stuff that's in the market?
Oh, yeah. And, Tom, I totally agree with you with music should be music. I mean, I'm on this program, and we only have an hour to really talk about it, but there's so many bands that are just trying to be bands, and they happen to just be Christians, and they actually, you know, are writing music. And there's a lot of, you know, in the early days, there was a lot of, you know, if you like this, you should listen to this, and right. if you're a band, you should copy this. And I hated that. I still hate that. Any kind of band that can't come up with their own original thoughts and original style of music being influenced by everybody, it's just, I don't have any time for that.
Tom, help me with one other aspect of music, and I'm going to continue to use the term Christian rock just as a way of understanding some of this. I take your and Brian's point, but there is the desire to design that music specifically for a Christian audience, but whenever you read anything about it or whenever you hear anything about it, there's always a big push for what they call crossover, to sort of get out from underneath that one single umbrella and be heard and played on radio stations in, you know, as just music rather than Christian music. But that's where I get kind of caught on this. If it's meant to be Christian music, does the crossover or should the crossover thing matter in a big way?
Well, there's the million-dollar question. I mean, in my mind, if it's going to work as music, it will have its own path. It will find its own path in the marketplace that may include a large degree of crossover, which is the case with something like POD. But then again, if it's, you know, if it's as derivative as what we just heard from Thousand Foot Crutch, then maybe not. You know, maybe it doesn't deserve to be there. I mean, I think if you're a radio programmer and looking at 10 pieces of music to add one to the radio station, you're likely to go to something that doesn't sound so imitative, regardless of what the lyric content is.
Just one quick one, Tom, before I let you go. Is Christian rock in any way having its effect on the music industry at large? Is it influencing other bands?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think more the idea of music that comes from a spiritual place and is directed at an audience that is predisposed to spirituality, you know, is probably a positive development, just in the sense of, you know, music has always been spiritual. John Coltrane's A Love Supreme is enormously spiritual work.
Right.
And to say that there's a place for that kind of expression within the great bounty of what's out there musically is fine. I mean, I think that's a positive development. When you look at the decisions of the major labels, do you see them sort of going after that sort of idealistic level of spirituality, or more the level of this band sounds a little bit like Aerosmith, but they're talking about God, so we know we can sell a certain amount. I fear it's the latter.
Tom, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tom Moon, music critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Excuse me. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And let's start with Alan, who's joining us on the line from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hi, Alan.
Hey, good afternoon.
Thanks for calling.
Good morning still. Great. I am 40 years old. And my radio station has two presets. One is NPR, and the other is a contemporary Christian station that's local here. And those are the only two things I listen to in my car, period. And when I can listen to them in the house, those are the things I choose in my house, too.
Now, I know why you're listening to The Connection, but why do you hit the other button? Why do you have the other preset there?
It's smut-free.
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 So is this about having kids in the back seat, or is that your own taste, though, Alan?
This is my personal preference. I have no children, and it's just what I like to listen to. I am not a Christian, I will say that. But, you know, I like the clean air.
Nancy Alexuk, it sounds like the same kind of standard that you're setting for the music that you play in the club. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. And, in fact, you know, the atmosphere that we've created at the club is very conducive to people, whether they consider themselves a Christian or not, because to your caller's point, he sounds like somebody that would probably really enjoy hanging out at 3 Degrees, because it's a smut-free environment, I guess, if I can use his term. A lot of people come in that aren't necessarily Christians or are even pursuing that, but they come in because they want an environment that's cleaner than a regular bar, but they still want to be in an exciting environment and listen to good music and have a great time.
And are there any rules about who can come in and who can't? If I was gay and I came in with my partner, would I be welcome in the club?
Sure, absolutely. We really want anybody to feel welcome in the club. Now, no matter who you are or what your preference is, if you're mauling over each other, then we would probably tap you on the shoulder, and, you know, because that, again, that's not what we're about.
No kissing in the club, Nancy?
Well, you steal a peck here and there, but if you're making out in the back, you'll probably have a visitor come sit down next to you and, you know, interrupt.
So what's the age then? I mean, will a club like yours be a place where a mom or a dad might drop their 11-year-old son or daughter off for the afternoon while they're doing some errands?
We actually ask that anyone under the age of 14 be accompanied by an adult, because we are in the Warehouse District, which is the nightclub bar area of right. Minneapolis, and I just personally don't feel that that's wise anyway to drop off little kids without you know, any kind of supervision. But our concerts earlier in the evening are all ages, and then the club is 18 and over after 11:30 at night.
Let's go back to our phone lines to Raleigh, North Carolina, and Jim's with us. Hi, Jim.
How are you doing? It's Tim, T-I-M.
Tim, thanks for calling.
Yes. Well, I appreciate it. I'm a 57-year-old 60s rocker, and, you know, my choice in music has radically changed over the years, and I listen to Christian rock exclusively, pretty much.
You broke all your Doobie Brothers records, or what?
No. It's just that things change. The spirit changes you, and whether you, if you, and that's the truth, and I feel sorry for Tom up there with the Philadelphia Inquirer. He needs to have an inquiring mind because, you know, that's what the Spirit is all about, and that's what the music is for. It's a ministry through the Spirit to individuals so they can identify with their particular genre or peer group.
So help me out with this then, Tim.
Sure.
Are you saying that you do listen to the 60s rock, but you also are listening to the new stuff, the Christian rock?
Actually, I kind of got away from the Christian rock. I mean, the 60s rock. You know, I'm a Pink Floyd boy with... you know, Saucer Full of Secrets, 1967, Jimi Hendrix, and, you know, the Chambers Brothers.
You've left the dark side, have you? Yeah.
I mean, I've been, you know, I've been around the block. I've had castles in the sand, and I prefer a shack on a rock. And that's some of the lyrics from Casting Crown song.
Tim, I'm really glad you called because it gives me an opportunity to turn back to Brian in helping better understand Brian. Who's buying? Who the clients are here? My first reaction when I was listening to the music and we were talking was it's more likely kids, but Alan and Tim are saying, hey, we're there too.
Oh, no. The funny thing is we always coined the term soccer mom. We always look to who's buying the records, and it's the parents of the kids that are buying these records for them, a lot of the Christian records, like Casting Crowns and Mercy Me and everybody like that. But, you know, there's also the dynamic of the kids that are actually going to the shows that, you know, they love music and they aspire to be part of music. So they're out going to Tower to listen to all the listening stations trying to find that rock. Or they're going to, you know, family bookstores and Baptist bookstores just trying to find that thing that just inspires their heart. And, you know, you asked the question, what's the point of going in the mainstream? Or you talked about that a little bit.
The crossover, yeah.
Yeah. The biggest point for, like, POD and Sixpence and Jars of Clay is they want to reach those kids that aren't in the church, too.
But is that wanting to reach them from a religious point of view or wanting to reach them the way any band wants to reach a wider audience?
Oh, well, if your heart is pure and you're really trying to be an evangelical band, I mean, you're trying to reach them and have those and save those kids and, you know, let them know the message of Christ and all that good stuff. And there's some bands that, you know, shouldn't be in the Christian world if they're just trying to be fans and get both sides of the coin. So that's a big part. The Great Commission, you know, that, you know, God teaches us is a big part of why these bands exist. I mean,
but you've got both sides. You've got people who are saying, hey, I can make money writing these songs and playing
them. That's true. And that's where all the big mainstream record labels come in. Interscope, American, Warner Brothers, Lava, Capitol.
Is that why you left? Did you get a little cynical about that?
Oh, no, I didn't leave at all.
You were with Warner Brothers, but now you're independent, right?
Yeah, I was with the Word label, which is owned by Warner Brothers,
gotcha,
which
right.
is Amy Grant, Point of Grace, you know. And so I was actually there, and I was brought in to bring more rock in. And then, you know, the whole thing with Leonard Cohen and the buyout and everything, and I was just one of the ones that got severed. There was half of the A&R department. So there's no ill feelings or anything, but, you know, that just kind of happened.
Let me go back to our phone line to Marshfield, Massachusetts. Now, Milton's joining us on the line. Milton, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Dick. A couple of comments that I had. The comments about ministry notwithstanding, I guess I wanted to speak more to the business end of things. As a person who is a Christian that doesn't necessarily buy into all of the evangelical aspects of what I take in the statement one of your guests made about a Christian worldview, I struggle with the fact that the word Christian is used as a marketing label rather than a faith statement. And that, you know, having had friends who were artists in the Christian music industry, the industry itself is not very Christian in the way that it operates. Christian, quote-unquote, Christian record labels don't necessarily treat their artists with any more sensitivity or any more kindness than a general market record company might do. In fact, some of my friends moved to general labels because they got tired of the way that they were treated. And I think also... Well,
was it any worse than most labels treat their artists who are up and coming? I mean, I never hear anybody saying I'm really happy with the company
right.
that's representing.
And I understand that. I guess my assumption would be that if a company is going to use Christian as a label, that would presume that they might do business a little differently. And that's why I say I get angry when Christian becomes a marketing label rather than a true statement of faith. The other thing that I think is in that regard is there are artists across the board, everybody from U2 to David Wilcox, who's a folk artist, and a number of people who are all Christians making music, but because it isn't phrased evangelically, they don't get put under that umbrella. And I think we miss a huge contingent of thoughtful and spiritual music that gets X'd out of being able to access the label because it's considered a marketing label.
Milton, let me just stop you for half a second and bring Nancy in here. Nancy, does your club have to make a profit?
Well, we actually are a non-profit organization, so no, we don't have to make a profit. We certainly have to cover our expenses, but no. And actually, David Wilcox is somebody we would love to have at the club. So because he is a person of faith, there, you know, to your caller's point, there are a lot of artists in the mainstream market that are evangelical Christians. And so it's kind of an interesting dichotomy. The whole Christian music industry, your caller is right, it's not a perfect industry. You have a lot of imperfect people that try to do the best that they can, but we've been doing concerts and working with bands for 15 years, and so we've seen a lot of the negative aspects, but you have to somehow be able to identify the artists and the music. And so Christian, you know, for people that are Christians, want Christian music,
right.
bands that are Christian, you know, that's just the way it is.
Interesting thought from Milton, though. If it's Christian, should it be Christian? Do they have to act in a Christian way? What are the standards? And how do you listen to the music? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And listeners, you have put us to work this hour, and I thank you for that. We mentioned at the beginning of a program a figure of $900 billion as representing the industry here, and we should actually give you a slightly better explanation of that. It apparently is a figure that the industry uses and describes just about everything that goes along with the Christian music industry, including concert tickets and T-shirts and albums. It may, in fact, include things like ticket sales for Passion of the Christ and sales of the Left Behind series. It's a figure which we could have checked a little bit more carefully, and I thank you for calling our attention to that. We are, however, concentrating on the music this hour. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Our next call is coming from Beaufort, South Carolina, and it's Michael on the line. Michael, thanks for calling. Michael, hi. So we missed you off the top, Michael, but you're with us now. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment. Well, first of all, I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
And listen to your show pretty regularly. I used to listen to a lot of this music, just rock music and Christian rock music. And about 7 years ago, you know, I got saved and I gave up a lot of that music. I used to play a lot of it even. I play the guitar, I play the trombone, some other instruments, and I used to play a lot of the music when I was in college. I'm 28 now. And
why did you get away from it, Michael?
Well, I kind of view it like from a scriptural standpoint. I believe literally what the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, where it says not to mix Christ with Belial, and I view that as the world's music mixed with Christian words, and some of the words do seem like they're pretty Christian, but you're taking a worldly type music and mixing it with Christian music. And I used to listen to all the music,
yeah.
So I'm not.
You know this stuff, but so where does a hymn fit in that, Michael?
Well, I think probably the days the hymns came in, they're kind of a pure generation. And if you look at some of the music, even that the hymns were set to, there actually was even considered in those days a worldly type, maybe the classical style. There was considered a worldly type music in their days.
So the music that we were playing earlier on the program, the contemporary Christian rock, what's your view of that? It's okay, you just don't want to listen to it and don't want to play it.
No, I would probably say, to me, I believe it's sinful. I mean, I believe it's wrong. I believe it's taking the world and mixing it with Jesus Christ and it's conforming to the world, which Romans 12 warns us against.
I'm going to let Nancy talk back to you on this one. Don't go anywhere, Michael, because I'm curious to know where Nancy's going to go with this. I just don't know the answer.
Well, actually, I believe that God is the one who created music. And if you read all through the Psalms, it talks about loud, crashing cymbals and make a joyful noise unto the Lord. And all throughout Scripture, music, I believe if it's used with the right intent, can give glory to God. And to me, the beats itself don't necessarily promote good or evil.
But isn't
to
there,
me, it's the heart and the lyrics behind it. So,
isn't there a sneaky side to it, Nancy? Aren't you saying, hey, kids like rock music, so if we make Christian rock music, we can use this as a way of getting kids into the church?
Sure. Absolutely. It definitely is a ministry tool. Jesus reached out in a lot of different ways to minister to people in his day. And the same with the early church and the apostles and the disciples. And I think it's short-sighted in a way, and I understand where your caller's coming from. To him, each Christian has to make their own decisions, and what is considered sin for one person may or may not be for another. If music was a very powerful force in his life and had negative impact, then, you know, I give him a lot of credit for saying, hey, you know what, for me, this is not okay, and good for him for sticking to his heart.
Nancy, go back to Michael on the point that you were talking about earlier. If the music, Michael, is a way of bringing converts to the Christian church, if it's a way of bringing people in the way Nancy describes it, even if you personally have some problem with it based on Scripture, do you have to sort of go, well, you know, if it brings people in, it can't be all bad?
Well, I kind of view it like, Are you bringing them in to make them more worldly? Are you bringing them in to tell them the truth about what the Scriptures really say? So I have to say back to a comment she made earlier along the lines that God created music. You'll also find the devil using music. It talks about the tablets there that he used. And when the children of Israel, Moses came down, if you'll notice, when they built their gods to worship, they were actually playing a loud music then. You can see it when Moses came down to the mountain, and they were sinning and what they were doing. So you can view that from two angles. I have learned over the years to appreciate hymns. The Bible says psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, and I don't believe that rock music falls in the category of spiritual songs, maybe of a different spirit.
Michael, I'm going to let you go and move along. I want to thank you for
all
the call, though. It's nice to have you on the program. 1-800-423-8255. Next to Greensboro, North Carolina, Danny's with us. Hi, Danny. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to make just a quick point, and that is that as young adults and teenagers come to know Christ, their musical tastes are not going to change. And I think as Christian music evolves and starts playing the style of music that appeals to the young folks, that it will give them an outlet to listen to, because people are going to listen to music whether there's Christian music or not. It's just something that we do.
Are you saying, Danny, that it's a little bit patronizing to try and take the lyrics of a rock song and specifically style it for a Christian teenager rather than just letting that Christian teenager find the music that he or she wants?
No, not at all. I think that that as Christian music evolves and because people just like you know, a lot of the young folks call, you know, the older folks in church blue-haired people,
right.
You know, they love their Southern gospel and that's what appeals to them and that's what speaks to them. But it doesn't appeal and speak to young adults. But the heavier guitars and the drums do appeal to the younger crowd. But with that music and the Christian lyrics, it gives them the outlet that we all need to listen to music, but it gives them the message that they're looking for.
I'm wondering if I can just turn back to Brian on this in terms of your own understanding here, Brian, of what kids are hearing in this music. Do you find that there are some specifically looking for the lyrics, what the message of the song is, or there are a lot of kids who, like Danny's saying, really just want someone talking to them with the language of an electric guitar and a decent drum kit?
Right. I believe, a main theme I'm kind of hearing is a lot of people feel like that there's just this one big guy, this big puppeteer trying to trick all these kids and make all this music and try to convert them and everything like that, when it's actually just a natural thing. All these bands love playing music. They love playing for kids. And some of them, you know, want to really be evangelical, and some of them just want to be kind of low-key and minister kind of in the, you know, off stage and stuff like that. And I really just think all these bands just, you know, have a pure heart and just want to play music.
Now, does it have to be an upbeat music that they play, Brian, in your mind? Can you have
You mean like tempo-wise?
No, I just mean the message of the song. I mean, could you sing a sad song about, you know, a relative dying or something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of hardcore bands like Demon Hunter and Living Sacrifice and Dead Poetic who take the darker side of the Christian world that there's struggles with. And like Demon Hunter, they're just like screaming, like, I can't do this alone. And so the kids who are contemplating suicide and contemplating all these negative things and have parents yelling at them and having all these things, they have an outlet to hear that these bands, they're crying out to God for them to help them. And they're trying to help, you know, they're just trying to learn. So, you know, a lot of people listen to music for different reasons. I love music that I can roll my windows down and enjoy it. And I really don't want expletives and all this kind of stuff in there. So I pick the rock bands that inspire me, you know, just to be a better person and just to love music. And, you know, I listen to mainstream music too, but I listen to more positive stuff mainstream-wise too.
Let me go
back. You know,
back
there's a lot of borderline bands too.
I get you. Let's go to the line to Avon, North Carolina. Linda's with us. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Thank you for calling.
What I was thinking about listening to this, I was a professional stagehand for a number of years and worked in the Midwest at a what would be classified as a roadhouse, 2,000-seat theater that had different bands in. And we would occasionally get Christian bands in. They were classified as missionaries, so they didn't pay taxes on the income. They had all state-of-the-art buses and equipment, and they would preach anti-drugs and how religion had saved them and Christ had saved them. And then I'd be closing up the theater and drive around, and the bus would still be sitting there, and the band and the crew would be out back smoking joints.
You got a little bit cynical about this.
Yes. I'm not a Christian, but I saw 2,000 kids in a theater really responding to what the band was saying and very positive. They use all volunteer crews by bringing in the local churches, so they don't pay for that.
Right.
And, you know, how many of these groups out there are using this as a tax break and a way to make money quickly and easily?
I talked a little bit earlier with Brian about that. I'd like to hear Nancy on how you know, when you've got musicians who are specifically on a certain message, whether or not that raises the bar pretty high for those musicians to then live that message in a way that Linda's saying she didn't see down in North Carolina or when she was working out in the Midwest.
Sure, absolutely. I don't think it's okay for people, especially Christians, to be hypocritical. And I think it's a really sad testimony when artists are different offstage than what they proclaim to be on stage. But as far as the money goes, boy, I tell you, there's not a whole lot of money in Christian music. Most of the artists that are out there on the road are deep in debt, and there's just not the same kinds of free-flowing money that there is in the secular music industry. And so I take a little bit exception with that. I do know that some of the bigger Christian artists a lot of times will have road crew and people with them, even sometimes people in their band that they feel called to minister to that are not a Christian, not walking a Christian life. And I've seen a lot in 15 years, but I do know that there are genuine Christian musicians out there that love the Lord, and they are living their life an example, you know, both ways.
Brian, where's the genre going, though, in your view? Is it going to sort of reach a certain part of the clientele, like jazz, like classical, like gospel, and sort of, you know, once it's hit that, that's where it's going to be?
I really feel like there's going to be a lot of stronger bands out there, because that's what, you know, we've always had the joke of Christian music being 5 years behind. And I really feel like I think bands are being able to step up, and musicians are really to step up, and I think the fans are stepping up. I think the whole genre is going to really go to more just being more excellent, because, you know, Christ teaches us to lead the pack, not to follow. So, you know, instead of following all the musicians, you know, all the other bands, we need to lead. And, you know, they talked about earlier if bands influence bands. I saw POD, and I saw every band that they played with at this rock fest stand on the stage and just admire them. And there's a lot of bands like Anne Berlin and Copeland that are touring with other bands that are influencing other bands. I mean, the Deftones, you know, Sonny from POD has actually influenced the Deftones and, you know, just impacting lives. So Christian bands are just going to become, you know, they're going to be a staple amongst music.
You Brian, know, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today. Nice to
thank you very much for having me.
Brian Mile is an independent A&R manager in the Christian rock industry. And Nancy Alexuk, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Nancy's a pastor and co-director of Club 3 Degrees in Minneapolis. Earlier in the program, we chatted with Tom Moon, music critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.